thing seemed self-evident. The manager looked at me in some alarm. He felt that I had an awful secret to reveal. "Come in here," he said, and led the way to a private room. He turned the key in the lock. "We are safe from interruption here," he said. "Sit down." We both sat down and looked at each other. I found no voice to speak. "You are one of Pinkerton's men, I presume," he said. He had gathered from my mysterious manner that I was a detective. I knew what he was thinking, and it made me worse. "No, not from Pinkerton's," I said. Something seemed to imply that I came from a rival agency. "To tell the truth," I went on, as if I had been prompted to lie about it, "I am not a detective at all. I have come to open an account. I intend to keep all my money in this bank." The manager looked relieved, but still serious. He concluded now that I was a son of Baron Rothschild or a young Gould. "A large account, I suppose," he said. "Fairly large," I whispered. "I propose to deposit $56 now and $50 a month regularly." The manager got up and opened the door. He called to the accountant. "Mr. Montgomery," he said, unkindly loud, "this gentleman is opening an account. He will deposit $56. Good morning." I rose. A big iron door stood open at the side of the room. "Good morning," I said, and stepped into the safe. "Come out," said the manager coldly, and showed me the other way. I went up to the accountant's wicket and poked the ball of money at him with a quick convulsive movement as if I were doing a conjuring trick. My face was ghastly pale. "Here," I said, "deposit it." The tone of the words seemed to mean, "Let us do this painful thing while the fit is on us." He took the money and gave it to another clerk. He made me write the sum on a slip and sign my name in a book. I no longer knew what I was doing. The bank swam before my eyes. "Is it deposited?" I asked in a hollow, vibrating voice. "It is," said the accountant. "Then I want to draw a check." My idea was to draw out $6 of it for present use. Someone gave me a checkbook through a wicket, and someone else began telling me how to write it out. The people in the bank had the impression that I was an invalid millionaire. I wrote something on the check and thrust it in at the clerk. He looked at it. "What, are you drawing it all out again?" he asked in surprise. Then I realized that I had written 56 instead of 6. I was too far gone to reason now. I had a feeling that it was impossible to explain the thing. All the clerks had stopped writing to look at me. Reckless with misery, I made a plunge. "Yes, the whole thing." "You withdraw your money from the bank?" "Every cent of it." "Are you not going to deposit any more?" said the clerk, astonished. "Never." An idiot hope struck me that they might think something had insulted me while I was writing the check, and that I had changed my mind. I made a wretched attempt to look like a man with a fearfully quick temper. The clerk prepared to pay the money. "How will you have it?" he said. "What?" "How will you have it?" "Oh," I caught his meaning and answered without even trying to think, "in fifties." He gave me a $50 bill. "And the 6?" he said dryly. "In 6s," I said. He gave it me, and I rushed out. As the big door swung behind me, I caught the echo of a roar of laughter that went up to the ceiling of the bank. Since then I bank no more. I keep my money in cash in my trousers pocket, and my savings in silver dollars in a sock. End of section 1. Section 2 of Literary Lapses by Stephen Leacock. Lord Oxhead's Secret, a Romance in One Chapter. It was finished. Ruin had come. Lord Oxhead sat gazing fixedly at the library fire. Without, the wind soughed, or sogged, around the turrets of Oxhead Towers, the seat of the Oxhead family. But the old earl heeded not the sogging of the wind around his seat. He was too absorbed. Before him lay a pile of blue papers with printed headings.